The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way. Something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. In one of my previous shows relating to the debt and deficit, I spoke about the solution to that debt and deficit problem resting in the hands of our president, our fearless leader. And from everything that I have been able to find out from the executive branch, the Congress, and the media outlets, it seems that there is a deadlock that is not able to be solved. So I got to thinking, and I believe in most situations or instances, whether it be, say, at McDonald's with my buds, talking to friends, even talking to politicians, when I say, did you know, I usually get a blank stare or a statement that that person did not know that which I was referring to. That being the case, I felt it was important to embark on a trip, so to speak, through our governmental system to inform you all as to the workings of this federal government of ours. In this, an ongoing series of podcasts, my mission will be to highlight the numerous departments of the executive branch of the federal government, their history, when they came into being, their mission, how they are organized, what they spend, in an attempt to give you a better understanding of what they do, how they do it, and where, if anywhere, there are places that might just need a bit of trimming, so to speak. In deciding where to stop, I thought appropriate that we begin with the executive branch of government. And if we think alphabetically, then agriculture would be the first. So how did it all start when it comes to the Department of Agriculture? The Department of Agriculture came into existence due to the efforts of President Abraham Lincoln, number 14 in our sequence of presidents. We all have learned in school that what we recall is he was assassinated and that he was the president that freed the slaves through the Emancipation Proclamation. But did you know Abraham Lincoln signed into law major legislation that included the Homestead Act, encouraging the expansion of U.S. westward by providing individuals 160 acres of public land just by settling and improving it? Did you know that Abraham Lincoln also signed into law legislation, the first Morrill Act, or better known as the Land-Grant College Act in 1862, providing for land which would then be used to establish colleges for research and instruction in agriculture? And did you know that Lincoln signed legislation which provided for the building of the first transcontinental railroad, which was finally completed in 1869? To put it in perspective and place Lincoln correctly in that niche of history, I believe a brief chronology of the Department of Agriculture is in order. As to segments of this chronology, I need to give credit to Chris Edwards of the Cato Institute. Let us begin. In 1789, the United States Constitution goes into effect, and when reading the enumerated powers found in Article 1, Section 8, there is no mention of the power to create farm and food subsidy programs. In 1820, the House of Representatives creates an agriculture committee and the Senate follows suit in 1825. In 1862, the Department of Agriculture is signed into law by Abraham Lincoln on May the 16th. Abraham Lincoln called it the People's Department. Further that, the purpose of that department was the general design and duties of which shall be to acquire and to diffuse among the people of the United States useful information on subjects connected with agriculture in the most general and comprehensive sense of that word, and to procure, propagate, and distribute among the people new and valuable seeds and plants. In 1887, the Hatch Act provided for subsidies to states for agricultural purposes in connection with the first Morrill Act of 1862. In 1890, the second Morrill Act began regular appropriations for land-grant colleges to the states. So we find by the year 1900, 11 million Americans are employed on farms, and in the Department of Agriculture, there are 2,900 employees. A mere century later, there would be only 3 million working on farms in the United States. But the USDA has grown to a department of 105 persons. But let's get back to the Department of Agriculture and skip forward a few years. In 1933, the Agricultural Adjustment Act and subsequent New Deal laws create the forerunner of today's major farm subsidy programs. The main thrust of the AAA, or Agricultural Adjustment Act, is to limit production in order to raise commodity prices. To that same end, the government plows under 10 million acres of crops, slaughters 6 million pigs, and allows fruit to rot in the orchards, even while millions of Americans are going hungry. Recall that the years of the Great Depression, as it was called, were 1929 to 1939. Some elements of the AAA are struck down as unconstitutional in 1936, but most of the law's central planning techniques survive in various forms in today's farm programs. And if you wonder why this happened, just Google Roosevelt and the Supreme Court. There you'll learn a new lesson as to Roosevelt's part in the destroying of this free enterprise system called America. But that's another podcast. Let's not get off the track a bit. In 1934, the Jones-Costigan Sugar Act imposes quotas on U.S. sugar production, while the Tobacco Control Act imposes quotas on tobacco production. Continue to recall and to keep in the back of your mind that word I often use, incrementalism, as it applies to the government's growth and intrusion into our free market system and into our very own lives. In 1935, the Federal Surplus Commodities Corporation begins large-scale food welfare activities with the distribution of surplus farm products to school. Now, let's skip forward a few years and go to 1946, a very good year for me. In that year, the National School Lunch Act creates a permanent subsidy program to provide food to schools, building on the Surplus Commodities Program of 1935. Now let's flip-flop the numbers and now go from 46 to 1964, and in that year, the Food Stamp Act was passed. And now, using their words, the Food Stamp Act authorized a food stamp program to permit low-income households to receive a greater share of the nation's food abundance. The Food Stamp Act created what has become one of the largest welfare programs in the government. Today, there are 47 million Americans receiving benefits under this program at a cost of over $104 billion. Today, this program is not called the Food Stamp Program anymore, but just as government has grown in size, so has the name of the program. It is now called SNAP, S-N-A-P, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And finally, in the year 2008, the Food Conservation and Energy Act expands farm subsidies and is enacted over a presidential veto. Gee, I guess there was at least one time in recent history that a president has tried to cut a program and make government a bit smaller. But this act was overridden by a congressional vote. Just take a guess which party controlled the presidency and which party controlled both houses of Congress. Yep, you guessed it. The president was a Republican and the Congress was Democratic. And to all of you out there, what started as a small department funding two employees has now grown into a behemoth large department, which in 2013 has an estimated annualized budget of $154 billion. From its own website, I quote, "Nearly 100,000 employees deliver more than $144 billion in public service through the department's more than 300 programs worldwide." And remember that worldwide. Continuing with the following mission statement they provide, "We provide leadership on food, agriculture, natural resources, rural development, nutrition, related issues based on sound public policy, the best available science, and efficient management." Now let's get to the nuts and bolts of this department. This you're going to love. The department is run by a cabinet-level secretary and a deputy secretary of ag. Additionally, we have a director of communications, an inspector general, a general counsel, an assistant secretary for congressional relations, a chief economist, a director of national appeals division, an assistant secretary for civil rights, and an assistant secretary for administration, under whom are the chief information officer, chief financial officer, and someone in charge of executive operation. Now, mind you, each one of the aforementioned entities have a cadre of employees that answer to them. Now, directly under the auspices of the secretary and the deputy secretary are 7 additional undersecretaries: Natural Resources and Environment, 2, Farm and Foreign Agricultural Service, notice the foreign, 3, Rural Development, 4, Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, 5, Food Safety, 6, Research, Education, and Economics, 7, Marketing and Regulatory Program. Now, these seven undersecretaries each have their own responsibilities. Now, I wouldn't bother you with that additional info, but I believe it is necessary for you to understand the magnitude of this agency, which eats up over $150 billion annually. Well, it took some ferreting out, but I finally got a handle on the seven undersecretaries, and lo and behold, we find that there are 17 separate agencies that fall under the various seven undersecretaries. For example, the Undersecretary for Natural Resources and Environment has two agencies that his undersecretaryship is responsible for, and those are the Forest Service and Natural Resources Conservation Service. The Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services has the Food and Nutrition Services and the Center for Nutrition Policy and Promotion. And here we find the government's distributions program, which include, now bear with me, the government loves acronyms, and you're going to love this thing. I want you just to listen to this grouping of programs that the government has created. First, we have the CSFP, the Commodity Supplemental Food Program. Then we have the FDPIR, Food Distribution Program on Indian Reservations. Next comes the TEFAP, the Emergency Food Assistance Program. Then comes CACFP, Child and Adult Care Food Program. Then we have the FFVP, Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program. And of course, we can't stop there, so we have the NSLP, National School Lunch Program. Then comes the SFSP, Summer Food Service Program, the FMNP, Farmers Market Nutrition Program, and last but not least, SFMNP, the Seniors Farm Market Nutrition Program. Now, if you're wondering why I've taken the time for all these individual programs, it's for you to see and get a feel for not only the numbers, but of the ridiculousness of these programs, such as the last one, Seniors Farm Market Nutrition Program. And as a senior, and after 60 years of living, I am well aware of my nutritional needs and do not need the government to tell me what to eat or how to eat. But I did not stop there. Out of curiosity, I wanted to find out just how much bureaucracy there was. So looking further, you find that for the Undersecretary of Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, the undersecretary has a deputy undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services. Then there is a director of the Center for Nutrition Policy and Promotion. And lastly, we get to the administrator for Food and Nutrition Services. And do you think that that person doesn't have a staff and others under it? Lastly, remember that these federal programs stay under the radar of constitutionality, they think, by providing funds to the states to administer some of these programs and therefore necessitate departments set up in each of the states that receive this largesse of government. Why do we need a middleman to hand out funds that originally come from the people, then are given to the Fed, then returned to the states, then given to the people? Something is wrong here. Washington, we have a problem. Along with this list, I found an additional level of USDA, which encompasses 17 USDA offices, such as the Departmental Management, Office of Advocacy and Outreach, Office of Budget and Program Analysis, etc. It goes on and on to the marvelous number of 17, and I won't bore you with those. What I did was pick the first one, Departmental Management. I found a website which explained that this department, for lack of a different term, was just recently created in 2009. And its mission is, I quote, "Departmental Management mission is to provide management leadership to ensure that USDA administrative programs, policies, advice, and counseling meet the needs of the USDA program's organizations, consistent with laws and mandates, and provide safe and efficient facilities and services to customers." Now, do you know what that mission statement really means? That is bureaucratic gobbledygook for more administrative management positions to grow the federal bureaucracy and provide jobs to more friends and people that can move your cause along. So now I went back to my organizational chart thinking somewhere this office or department should be found, but alas, no such luck. So I tried another of the offices, the National Appeals Division, and lo and behold, I found that its home rested at the Director National Appeals Division, which is directly linked under the Secretary and Deputy Secretary of USDA. Thinking I was on the road to understanding and figure out this structure out, I tried another office. Faith-based and neighborhood partnerships. This also was another new office established by the Obama administration. This office is listed as a resource to help connect you to USDA. Well, how many people do we really need to connect us to the USDA? The USDA, in its marvelous organizational structure, on its website also provides to the looker an additional list of USDA programs and services, such as broadband, grants and loans, disaster assistance, insurance programs, restorations, conservation water resources, SNAP, WIC, child nutrition programs, and the organic program, which regulates the standards for any farm, wild crop harvesting, or handling operations that want to sell agricultural products as organically predicated. for a total of 18 different programs and services. How these folks in agriculture can know what their chain of command is a question I will not take up here in this rendition of the USDA. In attempting to find data on employment manager ratios, the only data found was from 2007, showing that the professional staff was approximately 31.6% of the workforce, the administrative was 24.5%, technical was 36.2%, and the two smallest categories were clerical and other, making up only 7.8%. Looks a little top-heavy to me. Additionally, in its 2012 budget, the department does not give number of employees, but does give you staff years for federal, non-federal, full-time, and non-full-time employees. Now, wait a minute. You figure that one out. Go to the report yourself. I could tell you from the 2012 budget report put out by USDA, a performance analysis as to the percentage exposure to salmonella from broiler carcasses. I could tell you the average amount of food supplemental nutrition per person in WIC and CSFP. I could even tell you how many home ownership opportunities were provided by rural development. But I could not tell you the number of employees by grade or classification determine if the agency was top-heavy as to payroll or staffing. It was absolutely amazing the types of data you could get from this 150-page 2012 budget report, but even more amazing what you could not get. But what I did find out while perusing the morass of USDA was when I clicked on one of the links relating to grants, I found a listing of various types of grants that are under the control of USDA. Some were cost-sharing grants while others were not. Grants are given out either outright, some have dollar amounts that have to be matched, while others are commodity or activity specific. I had to go through 6 pages of documentation, which included descriptions, requirements, due dates, award amounts, contract sources. Within those 6 pages of grants, I came up with a rough total of approximately $1 billion in grants that were associated to approximately 101 individual grant programs run by USDA and given out on a yearly basis. Amounts of money that these departments have access to and find uses for is absolutely staggering. I picked out one grant in particular to highlight. Under the Agriculture and Food Research Initiative, Sustainable Bioenergy. This was a $0 to $10 million grant, which was open to just about everyone, including individuals. And let me read to you one sentence. The long-term outcome for this program is to implement regional systems that materially deliver liquid transportation biofuels to help meet the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007 goal of 36 billion gallons per year of biofuels by 2022. Well, if you haven't figured it out, this is for ethanol, which everyone knows is just plain stupid to use corn for fuel rather than food. Now you know why beef and pork prices have gone up of late. When we have so much oil and natural gas, and by 2022, technology will come up with something new and more efficient. I ask, why are we doing this? Having looked at the structure, the organization, the purpose, the only remaining aspect to this department was the total cost and how the various aspects and parts fit together. The Department of Agriculture in 2010 spent approximately $144 billion. Of that figure, the food and nutrition took up $105 billion, meaning 72% of its total budget went for food subsidies to people. That's government welfare, folks. At this point in my podcast, I kind of looked at my notes and I had too much left, so it was time to stop. And I'll leave with this. The Department of Agriculture is not one of the bigger departments in the executive branch of government, as we'll see later on. But it is one that could and should be trimmed and much of its responsibility returned to the states that it services. Why we have to give our money in the form of taxes to the federal government and then have it returned through the states, that is, after they've taken their cut, is beyond me. And all of us should be calling, writing, and petitioning our representatives in Washington to do something about it. Yes, Washington, we do have a problem, and it's you. Well, until next time, in our next Did You Know show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.